You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 477. Blah! This is the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, which should be the first normal episode of the calendar year of our Lord 2020.
And the decade, Adam. And the decade.
And the decade. And what are we, 9 days in? And we've almost like totally fucked everything up, like on like five different ways.
We do have our strengths, and that's screwing things up.
Like humanity is just bombing this decade so far. I'm punning.
Is it worth an oh the humanity? Is it worth that?
Anyway, so so this is a Punk News Podcast. It is a show. We talk about things that have happened with regards to news on punknews.org and elsewhere. My name is Adam White. I'm in Niagara Falls. Those two voices that you heard out of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Tom Trauma. I don't know why I can't speak tonight.
Are you high, Adam? Are you super high?
No, it's like it's a Thursday night. That's not really my bag. Yeah.
You don't get high on Thursday night? What kind of a stoner are you?
High on Thursday night. It's a weekend thing.
You're supposed to have your first bowl while you're sitting on the toilet in the morning.
It's my wife and I are going to watch TV on a weekend thing. Although, like, I was just reading, I don't know if you know, I'm just going to totally divert here. Also, John Gentile is here. John, hi, John.
Yeah, I saw Gremlins for the first time, and it is fantastic.
The movie?
Yeah.
You just saw it for the first time?
I just saw it for the first time, about 2 weeks ago.
Wow, you should see Goonies.
No, I was just about to say, there's all sorts of 80s things that I have a weird blind spot for, and I don't think I've ever seen Goonies.
See, I was like... I was like 10 to 12 when most of those classic movies came out, so I saw them all. I mean, I've seen them all many times and showed them to my kids, as a matter of fact.
Well, like, I've seen Gremlins 100 times, but, like, I don't think I've ever seen Goonies, and I think it was just one of those situations where at the point when it was a VHS tape that you could rent from the local corner store kind of thing, I would have went in there and I would have either... I would have shot it down because either A, it wasn't a cartoon, or B, it wasn't, I don't know, like Star Trek or something, or
rated R.
I was trying to watch, right?
You like went from straight from cartoon to rated R, right?
I didn't want to see anything with people in it that wasn't in space. Was probably what the reason was. But no, you asked me if I was high on a Thursday night, and I said no. But then I was reading. So, are you guys aware of a punk personality from Hamilton, Ontario, named Ben Rispin? Ben used to play in a Hamilton punk band called Saint Alvia that had a couple kind of like clashy sounding records that came out back in the aughts. But before that, he was in all sorts of bands that were kind of from in and around Hamilton that were like related to the scene that like Grade and Jersey were from. But anyways, so Ben's been like a long time member of the Ontario punk scene. And he in recent years had become a medical cannabis advocate. And more recently he has this like cannabis based digital media agency called Puff Digital that he works for. And they have a podcast that he runs called Into the Weeds, which is him and oh, what is his name? The singer of Death by Stereo. Ephraim.
David Lee Roth.
No, come on. Death by Stereo singer. He sings like Voodoo Glow Skulls now a little bit.
I'm in the weeds, Adam. I don't know.
Death by Stereo. What's the vocal?
Tom, you'll be interested in seeing the David Lee Roth solo show because I really want to see it.
No way.
No?
Couldn't care less.
No. Really?
Ephraim Schultz. All right. So Ephraim Schultz from Death by Stereo and from... And he's been in Voodoo Glow Skulls, and he's been in a bunch of other stuff. He's played with like Manic Hispanic and a bunch of those other kinds of bands.
He's the new singer for Voodoo Glow Skulls.
Okay. He's a new singer for Voodoo Glow Skulls. He sang for Manic Hispanic. What else? Anyways, though, so him and Ben have this podcast, which is like weed culture podcast, where they'll go out and they'll talk to various people, either in the arts or in the budding cannabis industry and stuff like that, just about their, you know, their experiences. It's a talk show, right? Interview show. Well, he posted this article that I was reading the other day where he went down to Las Vegas to go to this like 3 to 5 day cannabis trade show industry gathering kind of thing. And he gave this like detailed like 4 to 5 day triptych of all of his adventures and stuff like that. And it everything that like stereotypically could have happened at one of those things seemed to happen. Like there was a private Snoop Dogg show that they went to. They went to some party that was at Willie Nelson's house. Like all kinds of stuff.
It's funny,
like,
I'm drinking gin and juice right now.
Well, all kinds of stuff like that.
Not really juice, but it's got gin.
Well,
that was the big Snoop Dogg song.
He detailed in kind of like amazing detail the amount of just like weed consumed over these 5 days of the cannabis conference. And I was reading the thing while I was at the gym yesterday, and I'm just like, I'm such a baby. Like I'm like, I don't know what half these words mean that he's even using or referencing in this thing. And I'm like, I joke about it on this show now, but I'm like, my God, I'm like a 5-year-old in terms of my drug stuff, Tom. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
All right. Good talk, Adam.
But Tom, While I was at the gym, while I was reading Ben Rispin's Magical Mystery Tour live blog on my phone, I was listening to a podcast.
Mm.
That podcast, Thomas, that I was listening to was the most recent episode of a podcast called Still Punkin' Diapers. What's it called?
My podcast, my new podcast.
Yeah, what is it?
Punk Till I Die.
Punk Till I Die. Right. So I was listening.
Here's the thing. We had a different name for it, right? We're going to be called like Old Men Shouting at Clouds, like a Simpsons reference. But somebody already had that, so we had to come up with something really quick. So Punk Till I Die. It is. It's. I think it's fine. I don't think it's amazing, but I think it's fine. It's got punk in it, so I figure if somebody Googles punk podcast, you know, it might come up, right?
It denotes age, which is important for the theme.
Yes, and it acknowledges that we're geezers, yes.
Did you consider Fresh Air with Terry Gross as your name?
I don't even consider listening to Fresh Air with Terry Gross.
At one point, someone in the Punk News family, and I think it was Justin, and it was maybe Justin and the members of the Menzingers, they sat down at one point and they came up with a whole bunch of band names or a whole bunch of song titles that were all basically the punk pun versions of NPR stuff. And so there was definitely like Ira Thrash was on there. That was one of them. After like Ira Glass. And I forget what like the whole, he had a whole list of them. And I'm sure there was a Terry Gross one, but
they were all puns.
They were all puns on NPR stuff, but punky. So in a way,
puns is they lose their appeal after a couple of
right. But I just time. Like just like punk riffs on nerdy NPR stuff is both a very Justin thing and also like a very certain era of punk news thing. If you ask me. So anyways, I was listening to this episode of the Tom and Neil show. And I have an admission. I had not listened to an episode of the Tom and Neil show prior to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got it onto the internet, so I don't feel too bad about it because, you know, I did my part.
You guided us in, metaphorically.
Right. I made it happen. I technically reserve the power to just delete it if I get angry. But But
we're 10 episodes in now, Adam. We're a fully sentient life form. Mm-hmm.
So I listened to this episode, and so a couple things that were of interest to me here. So
okay. What number was it?
It was the most recent. So it was the one where you had interviewed Mr. Ricky Frankel.
Yes, yes.
So first of all, if you want to go, what is it? Episode 10?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So if one of the Punkies podcast listeners wants to go check that out and find out what Ricky, our past host, has been doing with his life, he's interviewed on there. So you have kind of like Tom talking to Ricky. So it's a very nice little supplemental to.
We fell right back into it like it hadn't been a day since we'd podcasted.
Yeah, and so I was listening to it, and on the one hand, I was like, "Oh, this is kind of nice. This feels like one of these shows where I don't have much to say, so I'm just kind of hanging out and listening to everyone else talk, and that's good." On the other hand. I have to admit I was listening to this slightly self-conscious about like I'm like am I part of this conversation?
Oh, do we talk trash? Are we going to talk trash?
Are you going to talk trash? and no, you guys didn't. It was nice. And
I believe John came up, but we didn't talk trash.
John came up in that like John is the one trying to make things happen, and you keep thwarting it by being
He's kind of John is kind of the glue that brought Ricky and I together. So
yeah, no.
If he drank a beer, I'd buy him one or a lemonade or whatever. Next time I meet John, for bringing Ricky and I together.
John was only spoken about in lovingly reverent terms. But the things that the thing that occurred to me here,
the part we recorded, we only spoke about him in lovingly reverent terms.
Yes. Now, what struck me is that first, Liverpool Neil sounds nothing like I thought he would. Okay. And I know he's listening to this, so I just wanted to bring. I was going to send him a message on Facebook and be like,
he is a loyal listener. He will send me a play by play critique of it as he listens.
And I was gonna send him a Facebook message and say, Neil, you sound nothing like what I've pictured, but I'm just gonna say it here on the show for everyone to hear because Neil sounds Neil of course has his accent, but he sounds like very pleasantly British. In almost
he's a gentleman,
like a gentlemanly British.
When he's not using words that make Americans very uncomfortable, he's a true gentleman.
Like he doesn't sound like a he plays in hard skin, right? Like
you thought he was going to sound like the singer for The Business or something.
Yeah, right. Like I was expecting like you know, no hair, no neck. You know,
that's me, dude.
Yeah, I was expecting the British you, and no, he's very gentlemanly, and it's kind of nice. But I wanted to give him some credit here because Neil's skill in that show, and it is something that we could learn from. John, this is something we could learn from Mr. Neil there, and I wonder now if he does this reflexively because we don't. Is that when some piece of random bullshit is mentioned, be it a band or a fact or something, he will pause everyone else doing their thing, rambling on, and contextualize what it is for the listener.
I actually did that in earlier episodes, Adam, because we had the same thing where I think we were talking about, we brought up John or something, and I'm like, we probably should slow down here and go and explain who that was if someone had only been listening to us and not come through the main podcast. I assume that most people will come through us through the fact that, you know, we're a spinoff. We're not a competitor. We're a spinoff.
I haven't been too worried about making the Punk News podcast accessible to people because we're really bad at promoting it and don't really post about it on the show. So I figure if anyone listens to this show, they already have the Stockholm syndrome and they're part of our army.
Well, you know, the thing with what we're doing, it's new. So of course it's got that kind of new car shine to it, that kind of element of excitement where we're definitely out there hyping it. We can't keep up this level of enthusiasm forever, but it's very exciting.
If you turned into episode 11 of Punk Till I Die and there was like a 10-minute conversation about like how itchy Tom Trauma was, at the end of that conversation Neil would pop in and very pleasantly be like, you know, for the listeners, I want you to know that Tom has chronic syphilis. And then we'd all go, oh, okay, that's why he's so itchy.
That's right? Not true. It's fully treatable.
So
it's not chronic.
I thought it was very professional and nice. So there. Tom has a podcast, is in our notes. I just wanted to kind of bump that up because it was in my brain. So yeah. I mean, Ricky was there, but who cares?
But it was fun. Ricky was our first guest, and it was very selfish of us because A, we needed to practice, and we didn't really want to practice on anybody who was like make us too nervous, you know. And like I said, Ricky and I fell into old patterns. And I think the reason, you know, Neil struggled to get in the conversation. I feared that might happen because normally it's just the two of us kind of bouncing back and forth off each other. We kind of had this rule where neither of us will talk for too long, kind of an unwritten rule, you know. But adding the third player was a nice element, and it was fun. It was good to catch up with Ricky, man. You know, it's been a year, but it was, you know, he has not looked back. He is mostly 95% out of the game and, you know, being an adult, something that the three of us are unable to do for whatever reason.
It was illuminating to hear Ricky's like reasons for pulling for back kind of spelled out that way, only because I'm like, I could have asked him, but I have a hard time speaking to anyone about anything at the best of times. So I just don't. So yeah, that was interesting.
Well, and you know, and I, cause my thought has always been, you know, as I've kind of, I always kind of saw myself fading away, not just drop, you know, walking away. You know, I never felt like there was a need where I'd have to cut ties and say, I'm done with this. You know, I mean, to me, it's like, oh, you know, I would like to, and maybe his way is better. I don't know. Maybe hanging around like a creep is not the way to do it, but I don't know. I still like it here. I want to, you know, I don't want to maybe work quite as hard as I have the last 5 years, but I still like being part of the brain trust, you know, if we generate enough brains to be called a trust.
More like John. a brain, take a penny, leave a penny. But you know, a brain.
All right. I'm going to shuffle our intro schedule around here. John, the very first point I'm going to put at the end before our song. So tell us about your film experience.
Oh yeah, we've been talking about dancing a lot.
I'm dying to hear about this.
I'm not going to dwell on it too much because the listeners have said enough of the dancing, but we've been building up this dancing story.
Listeners, John.
That's a good point. I do agree with that point. Anyways, we've been building up the dancing thing for like a year now. And so about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, On Friday night, I saw the Danzig movie, and on Saturday night, I saw The Misfits in Philadelphia with Dropkick Murphys and Agnostic Front. Misfits in Philadelphia were awesome. It was so much better than the Newark show that I saw. The Newark show that I saw, the performance was great, but the sound quality was so bad. The Philadelphia show, sound was much, much better. Tickets were much, much cheaper. I got primo seats for about $70, which I think, all things considered, is fair. You know what I mean? I went.
I mean, it's a ripoff, but it's not bad.
A lot of people spent $300. I wouldn't spend $300-$400, but it was great. Danzig was into it.
John. So it was in a similar arena in Philadelphia.
Yes, it was. But honestly, the shape of the arena is more oval shaped. I guess oval.
Were you sad? Maybe
it might have been too. I mean, honestly, I had great seats. I was dead center, and I wasn't on the floor. Everyone wanted to be on the floor. But honestly, if you were on the floor, I think you couldn't really see anything. Where me, I could see everything just perfectly from where I was standing, sitting. So it was great. I mean, the Misfits are great.
Could you see if Doyle's guitar was plugged in?
It was. AC Slave was there. A lot of people wished it was Des Kadena, and as people have guessed, that Des Kadena can't really sing anymore because he had throat cancer. And the rumor, the unproven rumor, is that it was supposed to be Des Kadena, but because he can't do backup vocals, they couldn't use him, which that is a shame. It would have been awesome with Des Kadena up there instead of AC. Not that AC Slave's not cool. But I mean, you know, Des Kadena's got the history with the band and Black Flag.
But don't you think that Des Kadena lost his rights because he played in the scab version? Remember, in like the 90s when baseball went on strike, anybody who crossed the picket line could never get back into the union. Don't you think that the fact that Des Kadena played in the scab Misfits like precludes him from?
No, for three reasons. A, Doyle was in the scab version, and now he's in the real version.
Well, I know, but Doyle was an OG Misfit too.
Sort of. So B, Jerry Only is still cool with Des Kadena. I see Glenn Danzig is still cool with Des Kadena. So why wouldn't they use him if they, you know what I mean?
Hey, you know what else? E, you and I are both cool with Des Kadena too. So
we are. I've seen Des Kadena's a nice guy. He's a cool guy.
I like Des.
I don't
underrated,
know.
Underrated as a Black Flag singer.
I mean, I'm not like friends with him or I wouldn't email him, but I mean, I've talked to him a couple of times.
Would you call him to help you move?
Would he call me to help him move?
Would you call him to help you move? That's what I consider a friend. If you call him to help you move.
Well, I don't think he would say yes, but I would just maybe he says yes. Oh, I'll hire Des Kadena.
Hey, bring your all black creeper van with no windows over here to help me move, would you?
To get if the listeners don't know, Dez Cadena was originally the third singer of Black Flag, and then he became the guitarist from 1980 through 1983. After leaving the band, he joined DC3 and then was in another band called Vita, and then eventually joined the Misfits in the early 2000s. He left the Misfits in the 2010s due to throat cancer. Thankfully, he healed from the throat cancer, and now he's in a band he's in Flag, but he's also in a local band in New Jersey that does like Bruce Springsteen type music. Anyways, nice. The Misfits were really cool. I also saw the Danzig movie, and Danzig was there.
So how great were the Dropkick Murphys? And did Ken Casey play his own bass, or did they basically have two singers?
I'm glad you asked this because I was going to ask this and feel like a total knob. I saw the Misfits, and I was like, how were the Dropkick Murphys?
You guys want my honest opinion?
Yeah, I'm curious because
don't sugarcoat it, John. Yeah.
Well, honestly, the criticism of punk news is that we're too much of a fanboy, which is true. But there's worse things than being too much of a fanboy. And we rarely do we post truly critical things. And frustratingly for me, when we do post critical things, I'm like, oh my god, we got that so wrong. Anyways, I'm not a Dropkick Murphys fan, and I thought they were cheesy and stupid, but they were competent musicians. Ken Kesey did not play bass.
Now, it is Ken Casey. Ken Kesey is the guy who wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Counterculture icon. I tried to say it too. I don't know why. Probably because I'm a Ken Kesey fan. But anyway, yeah, it's kind of weird.
People love them. They're
an arena. You know, Dropkick Murphys are an arena band at this point just because they play these kind of – a lot of their songs, the modern ones especially, have these big, dumb kind of choruses like that are meant to be played at a hockey game. So I would think that would work, but maybe not with the Misfits crowd. Well, you know,
people didn't hate them. The crowd enjoyed them, is how I'll say it.
The crowd was totally loaded.
There's such a honed machine that there's no spirit. There's no flair in their performance. Here's the point where I run across the stage. Here's the point where and I'm sorry, the bagpipes are stupid. Like, the bagpipes themselves are cool, but the bagpipes of Dropkick Murphys are stupid and cheesy.
The guy who loves xylophone and punk is making fun of bagpipes.
The xylophone and punk is weird and interesting and unique, where the bagpipe is like, we're Irish. You're not even Irish. You're from Boston.
And
most of the guys in the band some of the guys in the band aren't even of Irish background. It's cheesy and corny, and even the Pogues said, we're not actually Irish, so we're not going to just do Irish music. And meanwhile, Dropkick Murphys, who are just, I don't know how to pin the hate Dropkick. I thought they were, honestly, I think it's stupid. I'm sorry. I think they're stupid. I mean, I think
did they close with like Dirty Deeds or something? Did they close like an AC/DC song?
But honestly, like, they did a lot of very manipulative things in that they're like, this one goes out to the troops, you know, and I'm not against saluting the troops, but I feel as though are they doing that because they really want to support the troops? Or are they doing that because it makes them seem, you know, I don't know, like, caring, you know what I mean? Like we represent the common man. Now here's some jackass song about drinking and a bagpipe, and here's another song about drinking and bagpipes.
See, Adam, John on the Dropkick Murphys is like Jack Nicholson in that A Few Good Men movie. We just have to get him started and he'll come erupting.
I got two little points to make on this. I fully acknowledge that the Dropkick Murphys are a stupid band, but I have a soft spot for them in the way that I have a soft spot for kind of like all of the that whole Hellcat Records roster of like 1999 to 2002. Yep. Like, I know so much of it is stupid, but I love all of it.
I
unapologetically.
I'm killing on the Dropkick Murphys too, because I haven't really liked one of their albums for a number of years, but Do or Die is a freaking sweet album.
Do or Die with Mike still?
Mike McColgan. The first two were with Mike McColgan. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a fan of their, like, of their, you know, goofy ass Al Bar, you know, super Irish
street punk.
Street punk.
See, I like the street punk stuff.
Like,
yeah.
Like, to just like, Sing Loud, Sing Proud, Blackout, Warriors Code. Like, those ones.
That's the end of it for me, Warriors Code.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I listened to them after they went to that Warner imprint or anything like that. But yeah, I acknowledge that they're a fully stupid band. But again, they have this place that, like, they didn't necessarily earn but it's sort of cemented in my brain next to a bunch of other stuff that is that I genuinely will defend. So at the same point when those kind of like dumb Hellcat records, Dropkick Murphys records came out, that was the same point when Rancid 2000 came out, when the Joe Strummer's Global Go-Go came out, when like the Slackers' Wasted Days and that last Hepcat record came out. So like there's this whole era of Hellcat stuff that I love the core of it without having to defend myself, but then everything that was wrapped around it is probably stupid, but I don't care. Like, I'm sure Tiger Army, if you really look at Tiger Army, is a stupid band, but...
Yeah, Tiger Army's a stupid band!
But those Tiger Army...
Liverpool Neil's gonna write you a sternly worded letter.
So I'm sure that they are, like from an academic standpoint, I'm sure they are a stupid band, but, like, I could sit down and listen to Power of Moonlight and just be like full of nostalgia, and I don't care. I don't care that they're a stupid band, and that like that era of Hellcat stuff is it just works for me. But the other thing that I wanted to point out here, because I feel like this is relevant to you seeing the Dropkick Murphys open for the Misfits. You know who I saw the Dropkick Murphys open for? Sex Judas Pistols.
Priest. Oh, that's cool.
Sex Pistols.
In the case the listeners don't know, the Sex Pistols were an English band that formed in 1975, primarily conceived.
76.
Yeah.
75. Sex Pistols 75, Tom.
You sure?
Yeah, let's check it out right now.
All right, this is the part of the podcast where we look at Wikipedia. No. Listen,
there are way worse bands than Dropkick Murphys, and they were fine. I mean, they were fine, but they're stupid, and there's no spark. There's no soul there compared to the Misfits, who, you know, the Misfits are an arena band, but they're kicking ass. They're screaming. They're not playing perfectly. Like there's mistakes. They're spiraling out of control in certain parts, but not too much. And that was fire. That was spark. You know, that wasn't like Dropkick Murphys, a perfectly honed machine. That was punk, the Misfits. You know, it was cool. It was cool. In case the listeners don't know, the Misfits were a hard punk band. They're from 1977. So anyway, the night before was Danzig's movie. Danzig was there, and I guess you could say one of the main actresses was there. And so was...
Was she wearing a top for the premiere, John?
She was wearing a low-cut top, correct.
She was wearing a top, yeah, unlike during most of the movie.
That is an accurate statement, honestly. It really is. So anyway, Danzig's movie is broken down into three parts. And like the producer was there, too, who's just some guy, you know. It was a sold-out show. It was a packed house. The movie is three parts. The first part of the movie is... It makes sense, right? The story makes sense. The actors are all porn stars and strippers. Like, I'm not even kidding. Every single woman in the movie is a porn star or a stripper, and they're not great actors. The second film starts out making sense, and then just kind of ends and the third film it has no plot at all. It's like just a bunch of scenes. And honestly, with some of the films, if you show them in black and white, people say, oh, that's deep cinema. You know, but the acting is terrible. At this point, and actually, I think I saw what was the last showing of the film. I believe they said it was the last showing of the film. Danzig was there. At this point, most people went to laugh and make fun of it. And honestly, the frustrating thing is, like, some of the things are actually kind of – the movie is not good. The frustrating thing is if Danzig had an independent filmmaker with him or a film you could probably get an independent filmmaker for, you know, 10, 15 grand. If Danzig said, here's what I want, how can we make this happen? I think they actually could have made, like, a pretty cool film, you know? Some of the ideas are pretty neat. Some are just absolutely, like, insane, and you're like – Like where's he? And that's kind of what's cool about Danzig is he really is a weird guy. And there's some really weird things in the movie, but some of it is just straight up amateurish. And I feel as though had they brought in a consultant and Danzig said, here's what I want to do in this scene, then the consultant could have made that happen, you know? And honestly, like, there's a lot of not famous filmmakers that are great filmmakers, you know? And so it was doable. So honestly, it's frustrating that they didn't. But at this point, almost everybody, I would say 80% of the audience went there to laugh at it. And most people weren't Danzig and Misfits fans. And honestly, it didn't feel good. And I didn't like it. Because Danzig's there, people are laughing at it. The actress is there, people are laughing at it, and not in the oh, this is.
But this isn't the first time this has happened.
No, but so it's not. And so honestly, it felt very much, and I think this is exactly what made Danzig be who he is. It felt very much like let's all laugh at this person that we think is a dork and make fun of them, so we feel better about ourselves. And that's exactly what it was. And that's exactly what punk is not supposed to be, according to most definitions. You know, so it didn't feel good. I did enjoy that. I wanted Danzig to succeed. I wouldn't say the movie was a success, but at least he tried. But here, you know, people say Danzig's a diva. People say Danzig is a baby. People say Danzig is a jerk. He was there the entire time. Afterwards, he came out. He did a Q&A. They talked about it, and he waited to sign autographs for like 3 hours. I didn't even stick around for a while. Like, I was thinking about sticking out for an autograph, but I'm just not going to answer once this, but it felt a little beneath me in that at this point, I don't need to be getting people's autographs. You know, I do the interviews. I don't get the autographs. That's my perspective, which is kind of a dick move, but, and I didn't want to wait. Like, if I
You should have brought a bootleg Danzig or Misfits record, see if he'd sign it.
He won't. But you know, like people say Danzig's a diva, they say he's a jerk, but people laughed at him for 2 hours. He probably knew they were going to do that. He put on a brave face and he said, he kind of spun it to save a little bit of face. He's like, I wanted to make an off the wall, crazy, weird type movie, which he did. And honestly, I would rather see this kind of movie, Danzig movie, than Fast and the Furious 7. I'm so sick of Michael Bay movies and like generic Hollywood blockbusters that are just stupid. I'd much rather see a weirdo Danzig movie than that. But it's not a great movie. But listen, people make fun of Danzig. They say he went on YouTube. What a dork. You know, he got really, when it comes down to it, if a lot of people that make fun of Danzig, if they were in his position, would they go up there for 2 hours and get laughed at and then stick around with a smile on their face and sign people's autographs? I don't think they would. So when talking about Danzig, we have to talk about the guy as a whole. He put on a brave face. He went out there and he stuck around for the true fans and even though most people thought it was silly, he was there for the people that wanted to be there and the people that wanted to, you know, I guess, engage with Danzig. So you got to give him credit. The film is not great, but it's weird and different. And he did what he says he is going to do, and he really is who he says he is, which most punk artists are not. So,
Damn, there you go. That's.
I mean,
that's
put a positive spin on. I mean, I get what you're saying.
And honestly, like,
as if he did, doing it for the right reasons is as important as doing something good.
Oh, one other thing, I shouldn't append more on. I thought my statement was relatively powerful, but like people are like laughing at the actress, like she didn't ask to be involved in this farce. You know what I mean? And she's right there, and you're all laughing at her. Like it's not her fault. You know,
she took the money.
How much money do you think she's making off this movie, Tom? You know, and just because someone's getting paid for something doesn't mean you can humiliate them and laugh at them. You know, or
well,
you
can't. Much.
But it's not the right
thing. You're paying.
The other thing is, you know, people talk about Danzig, but you know, does the you guys do the Bechdel test? The Bechdel test is in a movie or a book, do two females talk about something other than the male characters in the movie? Most movies fail that. Every Fast and Furious movie fails that. Most blockbuster movies fail that. Danzig movie, all three films pass the Bechdel test by flying colors. And people have accused Danzig of being a misogynist. You really can't say that, at least from this movie. And that all the characters are women, all the main characters. They're all relatively powerful women. There's no denigration of women by men in the movie. So you can accuse him of being horny and a horn dog, but you can't accuse him of being a misogynist. You can't. He loves women. You know, I mean, he likes good look. He likes hot women, but you can't say he's a woman hater. He's just not. So,
well, I can't wait till that sucker's streaming somewhere.
Don't watch it around your kid, Tom. I'm serious. Do not watch it around your kids.
No. My 15-year-old wants to watch American Pie with me. I'm like, I don't think so.
No, that movie's probably terrible now anyways. I mean, it was funny back in the day, but it's probably bad now.
I mean, dude, he had sex with a pastry. How is that not funny? How would time take away from it?
You know, there's two cuts of that scene, you know. There's the unrated cut and the rated cut. And
wonder which one I have. I have the box, like a box set.
You
like
have
the first
box
two.
Set of American Pie?
Like the first two and then like... The American Wedding, which was terrible. The first two were funny, but it's kind of like, yeah, I don't know how well it's aged. The guy who wrote them was from East Grand Rapids.
No, you can't throw a local fact into there to try to justify this.
I don't know where I got it. You know, there was that time in the 90s where DVDs were taking off, and I kind of actually quit buying CDs and stuff for a while and was just buying a ton of DVDs. So like every DVD I bought is like from a real tight figure era, and that was one that I bought.
No, you know what?
And I thought it was funny. They had a franchise for a while that was sort of similar to like the National Lampoon's, where they were doing like American Pie Presents, you know.
I can't criticize this too much because I mean, like my wife and I were absolutely the right age of teenager to go see those movies in the theaters and to think they were super hilarious at the time. And yeah. I guarantee you one or more of them is here because I know the era that you're talking about, because there was this time when like after DVDs were new and before Blu-rays, that just DVDs were everywhere, but no one cared. Yeah. Where like my wife would come home and she'd be like, I bought these seven DVDs that each cost $2 or something like that.
That's like kind of like CDs now at a lot of places.
Yeah. And now they're just in my basement in a heap and I don't know what to do with them. Like no one wants them.
You should watch them, Adam.
No.
Sure, you should watch them with your kids.
Like, what do I mean? Like, it's all 90s stuff. But Adam,
he thought it was lube and it was glue. How is that not funny?
Like, I shudder to think what's in the pile. Like, what am I going to go do? I'm going to go watch, like, the Blair Witch Project or something else from that era that is, like, sitting. Yeah,
yeah. You know, that's what I saw at the theater and really enjoyed, and I haven't watched since, and I'm pretty sure I have it on DVD, too. So
that was one of the first movies that my wife and I saw together. Actually, my wife and I's first date was we went to see The Sixth Sense. That was our first date.
Nice. For us, this puts me in my era. It was Misery.
Ooh.
Misery?
Jeez.
Great, great film. Great film.
The old Stephen King. So that would have been late 90.
Wow.
Yes.
So speaking of regrettable things, I'm going to do a sales pitch right now.
What are you implying that my wife marrying me was regrettable, Adam? Don't make me drive up there.
I'm just saying that, like that you know that if you're trying to charm the lady, Misery might not be the best.
I think the first two movies we went to were horror movies. As a matter of fact, I think it was Misery, and then Jacob's Ladder, which was a cool movie but didn't stand the test of time, and then Ghost. So eventually Ghost. I sold out.
Did you get one of those pottery things after that?
To be like, I don't know. Oh, I never did.
All right. So anyway, so speaking of whatever my segue was, this is my sales pitch here. So I, Adam, Punk News Podcast co-host who you all love and want to give $6 to, has a tape out. So the tape, it is called Under the Circumstances. It is the first in a series of tapes that are gonna come out under this name, at least until my wife says stop throwing money at this. And it is a compilation of kind of like weird and wild Canadian bands of the kind that I write about on the weekly newsletter, where I write about weird and wild Canadian bands. This first one that came out, it's got New Vogue, which is a kind of cool Devo core band that is members of Priors out of Montreal. It has Partner, which is the Polaris Prize nominated, the kind of like righteously queer slacker rock band that's out of Windsor right now. Psychic Void, which is another band out of Windsor that probably plays a lot of shows out in Tom's neighborhood. They're part of that whole kind of like Windsor, Detroit, scuzzy proto-punk axis of bands. But they have an awesome tune on here. Tough Age, one of my favorite bands in the world, and they're playing a cover of a Wire song on here, and it's super neat. And then Wares out of Edmonton, which is one of the best bands in Canada, if you ask me, taking one of their best songs and making this kind of like fucked up underwater shoegaze version of it that you can only hear on this tape. So anyways, I have these tapes. They're $6 a piece. If you want one, go to someparty.ca. I will send you one. I will send you stickers. I will send you whatever stuff I have in my pile to send you. And if you're looking for a way to support me, I mean, not the podcast, but fuck the podcast. If you're looking for a way to support me, Adam, the real reason you listen to this podcast, you would go buy a tape. Now, does you buying a tape help me in any way financially? No. Because this project is deep in the red. And if you bought all the tapes, it wouldn't matter. But you know what? That's not what we're in this for. We're in this for the culture. We're not in this for the money. Because if we were in this for the money, I would have taken all this money and just, you know, put it on red. So yeah, I have a comp out. I'm very happy with it. I shipped it like a whole fuck ton of them out this past weekend. And just having them, having like, the orders of them that I had bought just like slowly evaporate has made me feel very good. So if you want one of these before
you, you get down to the last like 10, you'd be like, I can't bear to part with them. I need to save these.
Yeah. Like I sent, the reason this is a 5-band comp is because I wanted to send all of the bands like a good, meaningful chunk of tapes. Like, you know, give me a cool, rare song and I will give you, you know, enough tapes for you to actually go sell them and be worth your while. So I talked to a few label people and they were like, oh, well, actually, this is something I really want to give some shout outs to, because some label people really gave me good advice on this. There's a label called Pleasance out of Toronto that has put out a bunch of cool stuff. And and Paul from Pleasance, he basically like gave me their books at one point, because I kept sending him like dumb email questions about how you run a tape label or a label in general. And he was like, here's how we do it. Like, here's the breakdown on how much we charge compared to how much it costs us, compared to how much we give a band, compared to whatever, and all this shit. And I was like, oh, okay. So he gave me like very rational numbers that if you sold all of your stuff, you would break even. And then I fucked those numbers up and just gave away way more than he told me to, because I'm looking at this and saying, you know what? I have a job. I'm not going to run a label. Right. So
the same reason most of us don't really try to get into shows for free, because we have better jobs than these musicians who are in much.
Yeah. Right.
Honestly, if you're trying to get into a punk show, that's like $12 or less, just pay.
Yeah. It was that sort of thing. So I'm looking at this and I'm like, I'm going to make, you know, X amount of these. And then I'm giving away at least half of them, if not more, back to the bands. Cause I don't care. Like, what am I going to do? Right. Like if I broke even on the whole project, all it would mean is that potentially my wife would give me less side eye about the whole thing.
So when I was making fun of you for being a cassette thousandaire, I was really overestimating the situation.
Oh God, I am in cassette debt. My only problem with being in cassette debt, and this is where it's going to come back.
You want to make more and more and more.
Well, no, I do. But like, this is what's going to bite me in the ass. Is first of all, I thought to myself, well, all right, like I probably shouldn't do this too much because it is a money losing operation. But then someone on Twitter, a member of a band, sent me a message and was like, eh, you know what? He's like, whenever someone tells me that about like being in a band, my answer is like, well, some people have a dirt bike. And I'm like, yeah, all right. It's kind of like having a dirt bike, I guess.
Yeah, it's an expensive hobby. There
it's a stupid expensive hobby that you've done, right? But the, I don't know, my other point was with that. Anyways, yeah, it's like having a dirt bike. In any case,
are you gonna play one of the songs then?
No, because I've been really stubborn about this, and I'm leaving this. So I'm both leaving this entirely digital, which is a John Gentile play.
Because I mean, entirely analog.
Entirely analog. Right? In that, like, you know, like because all the Punk Tunes tapes never went digital. I mean, like they might be on,
and they never will. They never will.
I mean, some dick could go put that's them not on true. YouTube.
I'm working on a secret digitization project.
I mean, that's what happens to all these.
I'm going to be a digital thousandaire.
Yeah, like a lot of times, a lot of these tapes will end up on YouTube because someone puts them there. But whatever, if that happens, it's just like, you know, nature found
you
a
won't
way.
You won't relentlessly hunt them down.
No, because I don't care. But also, like in the spirit of this whole thing, where like a band is going to give me a cool, weird song that they have sitting around. I'm going to go make some tapes. I'm going to give them the physical tapes. They can turn around and sell those at their live shows and make some money from these tapes that I basically gave them for free in exchange for a song that they gave me free. Like that all feels like a transaction that is fairly, like it's even, right? If I'm going to then take the song that they let me put on the tape and put it on Bandcamp or something like that, like the exchange starts to evaporate for me, because now I'm selling.
Yeah, see, you're never going to be a record label mogul.
Yeah,
you're like, never going to be a mogul with that attitude. It's all about locking up those rights.
No, like because like these aren't my songs. I mean, like if the bands want to put them on the internet, they can fucking put them on the internet, and I encourage them to. Right, I hope if they do put them on the internet, they maybe use the tape's cover art to promote it or whatever. But I don't, you know, ultimately it's not my shit. So you know, I'm gracious that they wanted to be part of the project. I'm not going to go try to, like, you know, stick them on Spotify. Because
John, do you think we need to set up some kind of a, like, meeting between Adam and Tony Victory?
Yeah, I think Adam wants to be the next Tony Victory. You know what I mean? So we're banging.
He's doing it wrong.
I am. It's hilarious. So we sat down in my office on what was it on New Year's Eve, right? So I set up a little online store to sell these things, and this is the boring fact here is that so the store I set up through Shopify, which is a place you can sell things on the internet. This is boring, but the non-boring part of this is that my work is a Shopify partner. Because we use that tech for some of our clients. So if I'm going to set up a store, well, I'll set it up through our partner thing, because that's the way I know how to set up a store. What that meant was that inadvertently, every time someone bought a tape on the first day of launch, my boss got an email. It was like, someone bought a tape. So he walks into my office and gives me this stack of paper at one point, and he's like, what is this? And I was like, oh, that. So I pull one of the tapes in my pocket, and I like explain to my two business partners what I am doing and what this is. And they're looking at it, and they look at the tape, and they look at me. And you can tell, like, the wheels are turning in their heads. And then one of them looks at me and kind of is like, he gives me this look that you would give someone in, like, an intervention. Like, puts their hand on my shoulder and is like, you're losing money on this. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, that's why you guys aren't involved in this venture. And they're like, okay, whatever. Change the email, please. So, yeah. Anyways, listener, if you want one of these, go to someparty.ca. You will see the tape. Click the tape. And then the internet fairies will lead you to the place where you can give me money. And then I'll send you one. That's what you should do. I encourage you to do it. Even if you don't need one. Let's say you needed something that was about the size of a pack of cigarettes that you could roll up under your sleeve and look really cool like James Dean. One of these tapes would do it. That's all I have to say about that. So anyways, yeah, please buy a tape. They exist. They're out in the world. They're released. You know what, John? I put it on Discogs the other day. Like, yeah. did the entry, and that's all I wanted to do. I realized, like releasing the tape, mailing them, trying to cat herd all the bands into giving me the songs, doing the artwork, all that shit. Yeah, that's fine. Putting it on Discogs, that was the part that I really wanted to do. I should have just made up fake tapes and put them on Discogs, and then I could have shortcut all the stuff that costs money. That's it. That's all I have to say. So anyways, buy one. John, before we get to a song, do you want to...
Well, I thought you were going to play one of your songs from your tapes.
No, fuck that. It's not on the internet, dicks. Buy one.
I'm sitting here digitizing them right now, even as Adam talks about how he's owing me a heap of analog.
But before we play any song, do you want to talk about how we're still alive?
Oh, yeah. I'll just be brief about this. This past year... Woo. Let me drink my
root beer. Are you sure you're still alive?
This past year, a bunch of publications shut down or kind of shut down or went into slow mode or got bought out by big corporations. Actually, Don Giovanni, the record label on Twitter, did a whole spiel about this. I agree with some of it. I disagree with some of it. And they basically said independent media is now dead. And a lot of people didn't really realize what he was saying. He wasn't saying that there's no independent media. He was saying that it's hard to be independent media. And a lot of independent media has been bought out by major media or semi-big media or whatever. The point being is 21 years old, man, punk news is still going strong. We got a whole bunch of new writers this year, some new news editors, which is great. They're doing a great job. Some new reviewers that are doing a good job. And it's just a nice feeling.
And a few of us just hanging around, not worth much. Right, Adam?
Punk news really has no editorial direction. We really have no one at the wheel to a degree. We've taken a lot of shit over the years from a lot of different publications, and there have been some supportive publications too. And it's just nice that a lot of these ones that have like spit on us and say blah, 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 they're all gone and we're still here and we're still in roughly the same shape we were 5 or 10 years ago. Now, you could say, well, you know, Vice, you know, was so much smaller 20 years ago. Now they're gigantic. But I don't want to be Vice. You know, we're still kind of the same thing we've always been. We're trucking along. I feel pretty good about what we're doing. I phased myself back a little bit this year. I'll probably phase back even more. some of the new people come in are doing a good job, and it's just nice that I mean we're a lot of friends are no longer around just because it's tough to keep running a ship like this, and we're still here after 21 years. It's a good
thing. It really is amazing that there's been no major lapse in service or whatever you want to call it, right?
And we're doing more news now than we've ever done, which is crazy, you know.
Well, so. you see other sites that do get burned out, and I think our greatest strength might be our collectivism, that there is so many people. So, like, for years, John, you were, you know, doing 90% of the stuff, and now you want to step back, and other people have picked up the slack to a certain extent, you know.
I attribute our success as to my desire to wipe out any competition.
Is that what it is? Yeah. Your Howard Stern like devotion to destroying your competition. we should have funerals for every site that goes under.
Shouting fraud is not a good emotion to have, and even conflict and ill will is not a good thing to hold on. But honestly, we have had I'm going to say less than a handful. But a few people really come at us, and we've broken them all, and that's a good feeling too. You know,
John, I'm still angry every time if you happen to see a Google search for punk news. I mean, I go there so often that all my computers have the little P icon for like a shortcut.
Yeah.
When you accidentally Google it, and that stupid freaking Razor Cake buyout story comes up, I still get so angry about that because it's typical of the news cycle. Unfortunately, in other words, it's like real gotcha type of news. But then, even when the truth comes out, there's no retraction. There's no walking back, even though it was total BS.
That was a little bit before I became one of the heavy hitters at the site. And I think I would have handled it a little bit differently, but you know,
hindsight. Adam used his nice guy Canadian thing. You would have just gone full pit bull.
I would have went right. I mean, just like, well, listen, I'll just say, like when Ben Weasel came after us and we fought back, we broke him. We got Ben Weasel to run away. You know, I would have fought right back. But you know, I mean, listen, different strategies. You know, the other perspective is we kind of ignored it, and did it really hurt us in the long run? Not really. I mean, really, the only bad feeling website left towards us is Razor Cake, and they beg for money twice a year, you know. And they say we do our part, but they're always begging for money to take advertisements. They say we do our part, and you know, they kind of just they do shitty reviews. But listen, I'm not trying to be negative.
You know, if it makes you feel, you know, I think Razor Cake, and I was always a very religious Maxim rock and roll reader, but over the years I came to resent the fact that they were they became the punk gatekeepers. And they always were the punk gatekeepers, but I just didn't realize so much when I was younger. But Razor Cake has picked up the mantle of the punk gatekeepers, and that's why I'm kind of like, screw Razor Cake.
Listen, whatever. You know, like, honestly, they talk a big game, but we're still here. We're still doing our thing. We're not begging for money. You know, we have no gatekeeping at all.
I believe Adam was just begging for $6, so caution, please. Caution.
Yeah, anybody that wants to write for punk news can write for punk news.
It's not true, Adam. You weren't being.
If you want to review Larm, if you want to review Galde, if you want to review Britney Spears of punk news, we'll run it. We don't care.
Or John, that was the first of those three things you said that I actually had heard of was Britney Spears. I have no idea what the rest of that stuff is.
And so that's what we're all about, baby. We have no gate. You want to come write for us? You can come in to us. That's what punk's about. Anybody can come to the party as long as you're not an asshole to everybody else at the party. And if you're not an asshole to everybody at the party, you can be at the party until John sees you as a threat, and then he'll try to wipe you out. But anyways,
I'll go for your throat like a rabid pit bull with AIDS.
I'm very proud. Adam, you deserve a big part of this too, because for the first 10 or 15 years, you were kind of one of the main guys driving the ship. So kudos to you too, Adam. We're still here. Thanks, and the great part to the foundational blocks you built with the site.
I'm chewing on my.
I thought he went to get a drink or something.
You know what? I mean, thank you, John. I don't know. I'm chewing on my cheek about what I think about the Razor Cake thing. If only because it's one of those things.
Still makes you angry, doesn't it?
Well, it does. In that, I am like directly. I think they called me a cheerleader in it. Like I am directly quoted in it as being like the problem and.
You were the one who they talked to. You ended up being the spokesperson, and you didn't say anything wrong, but it was definitely kind of a you know, a guarded type of statement, and they just jumped on
Yeah. Well, I mean, if anything, I was protecting Aubyn's privacy because he didn't talk to them, right? But I just, yeah. So, but there's a part of me that, I don't know, like, I don't.
Who was it? That was Dan Ozzie, right?
He wrote one of the pieces for that, but I don't think he was the one that wrote
doing,
the main one.
I swear they ended up doing like a zine about it.
They did.
They did. I bought it.
Did you?
Well, see, I've thought about buying it and then like hanging it up, like framing it and making it like a little centerpiece thing.
Like that because, sweet Archie comic I have with the Ramones on it?
Yeah, well, because if there's one thing that I've kind of come to appreciate in my age and in my like Vulcan Canadian logic here. Is that it's better in a way that you're like, if your rivals and enemies aren't thinking about you, then that's almost worse than if they're stuck thinking about you.
So it's almost a compliment that they care.
I want to occupy, like, see, it's like, I know that our efforts have never been, with like our efforts have always just been like done out of like love of the genre and like a wish to help the scene, right? So like our motives have been pure, and I know that because, you know, fuck, I'm trying to get someone to buy a $6 tape and it's 20 years into doing this, right? I'm regressing.
You're actually going backwards.
Like, no, like I'm pretty sure that if I was gonna, like, you know, manipulate the punk scene to get some cash out of it, I would have figured out a way to do that like 18 years ago, right? But it's not like the contributors to Punk News are contributing because they want to and they feel driven to, and that's always been the case. And if someone is gonna take that and, I don't know, like pervert that or try to harbor a grudge for it or try to like find like the sneaky undercarriage of it or whatever, I mean, like, I, you know what, I'd rather occupy that space in their head than have them ignore us and say we don't matter. So I look at a lot of these, you know, early or like mid period punk news detractors, and I sit back and I think, oh, exactly what John was saying, like we're still here, motherfuckers. And like whatever your criticism was, whatever your doomsaying was or whatever, it didn't seem to play out like you thought it was going to. So, you know, press a million zines of outdated information that doesn't make sense.
The only reason we've survived is because of our huge corporate sponsorship and ownership.
Yeah, and we should put, as
I love that people says, think we're much more organized than we are. I love that.
To give the listeners context, years ago, Razor Cake wrote an article how Punk News had been bought out by some – I forget the name of the company, but it was actually not true whatsoever, and we had not been bought out by that company. We've never been owned by
anybody. Even though they did have the name on their website as a property, sort of misleadingly, but
– the company did. We didn't. That's the difference. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, but Punk News has never been owned by another entity other than itself. So we've never been owned by
Major. I'm not even sure that Aubyn is real, honestly. I think he's sort of like Aunt Jemima, just like a sort of made up
corporate. I'm not convinced Aubyn's real anymore. No one's heard
from him to his
like
wedding.
A year and a half.
You went to his wedding, right?
I did go to his wedding. He's always been nice to me. He's a lovely person. I realize I've been more critical of him on the podcast than recent, but I'm just trying to
You guys were at one point pretty good friends, I assume, or no?
I mean, we were as pretty good as you could become internet friends. Like, we were never local to each other in a way that we hung out anything like that. Like I'd get to Toronto every once in a while and we'd go see a show or something like that. He's always been his own dude.
Went to his wedding, but you didn't stand up in his wedding.
I went to his wedding he came to my wedding, I think. I went to his wedding and he went to my wedding. We've been to each other's weddings.
Saying that a year or two ago. It was relatively recently. Couple years
ago. He got married recently, and I got married before he did, and he came down to my wedding actually. So no, but I'm just trying to shake him out of the bushes. Aubyn's always been a mysterious dude, but like seriously, I wish he would answer some of John's emails right now so we can get into some of the fucking accounts that we need to get into.
He's an absentee landlord.
So I don't know where Aubyn is. I mean, what I'm worried about, my greatest worry in the world right now, is that at some point everything's going to disappear, and then we're going to try to figure out what's going on. They're going to be like, guys, like Aubyn died in 2016. And we'll be like, what the fuck? How has everything just been running since then?
But he teases because you have keys to like a lot of the outer rooms, but you don't have keys to like the basement or something.
That is true.
Now, I'm sure that a certain article in a certain magazine would claim that, well, that's just because Auburn is actually, a deep fake created by Monsanto to manipulate.
Like I said, he's like Aunt Jemima. He's just like a made up figurehead. He's Colonel Sanders.
I'm just trying to drag this out right now because we are 58 minutes and Colonel 46 Sanders is seconds.
Real, Tom.
I know, John.
Oh, yeah.
58 minutes and 51 seconds into this episode, and we haven't actually done the things we're supposed to do yet.
Nothing that interesting happened this week anyway. It's January.
I think this week was one of the most interesting weeks we've had in a year, probably. Yeah. However,
a year, not a year, maybe a month or two. It's been a slow couple months.
Getting Fat Mike doing a weird sex podcast. Green Day.
That's what the Punch or I Die podcast is too. We're going to be giving tons of bad advice.
Green Day paying for Denny's damage. This is what's the other really interesting thing? Let me pull up. I mean, we're not going to talk about it today because we've already been on for an hour, so we'll just talk about it next week because it'll probably be a slow week this week. But a lot of interesting stuff happened this week. Here. UMG.
Dude, I heard. So I was driving.
That's extremely interesting. Ted Leo touring as Dexy's Midnight Runners. That's very interesting. Mannequin Pussy describing why they were allowed to play Coachella. This is all very interesting. I mean, what do you guys want to talk about? The new Dropkick Murphys album.
You know what I want to talk about, John? You know what I want to talk about? I had to drive. I had to do a little driving this evening, and I forgot to push the little CD button in my car, and the radio was on, and I heard a new Green Day song. It was one of the worst pieces of garbage I've ever heard. It might be less punk than Fall Out Boy.
Tell me this. So
it was awful.
Tell me. So a while ago, Billy Joe Armstrong's he had a side band called the
Network.
Foxborough Hot Tubs?
No, after that, like the Car Drivers or something.
Pinhead Gunpowder?
No, after that.
The Network.
John, I don't know. I'm stumped.
After the Network.
Yeah, after that. Well, I'll look it up.
You've heard of the Network.
So anyways, they played a really small venue in Philadelphia, the First Unitarian Church, about 300 people, right? And so everyone was trying to get tickets, and I just kind of said, I'll go check it out because it's a big event. And I just got tickets, and no one else got like probably 95% of the people that try to get tickets couldn't get tickets, and I just per chance got tickets. I didn't even really try that hard, you know. So I had two tickets, and so I know a guy in Philadelphia who he's a nice guy. Actually, he's a really nice guy, but he's kind of known as the OG punk rocker, and like everybody knows this guy. And it turns out that like he's a Green Day maniac, quite surprisingly. And so I know his wife, and his wife said, you know, would love it if you took him to Green Day because it's like his favorite band, and it would blow his mind. So yeah, I'll take him. I really don't give a shit. You know, I don't really care. Oh, The Long Shot. That's what it was called. The Long Shot.
Oh yeah.
So we went and saw it. And, you know, honestly, I thought it was kind of boring or whatever. So anyways, he's like, John, Green Day's going to, but he thinks I love Green Day now. And he's like, John,
Green Day's going forever. You're going to be the Green Day guy.
He's like, John, Green Day's going on tour, and I might be able to get us like front row tickets, man. If I get him, you're coming with me, man. Thanks so much. And I'm like, see, I don't want to say I don't want to go because that would be like really rude, you know. But I really don't care about seeing Green Day front row. You know what I mean? It's like, so I'm in an awkward position.
Ooh, okay.
Well, the good news is, John, if you go to this next Green Day tour, Fall Out Boy and Weezer are also playing.
Great.
So, Tom, the Network, who were recently talked about only because they had their record that they had come out was called Money Money 2020. So,
I don't remember that at all. I must have zoned out.
It was a band of people in masks or something like that, where they never outwardly said at the time it was Green Day, but it was pretty clear that it was Green Day, and they were playing
like all three of them.
Some of them.
How
more
freaking alter egos do these guys need?
They also
like Green Day.
They played sort of like a synth punky thing that was like it never had enough weirdness to be Devo-y, but I guess that's probably the easiest comparison. It came out at about the era when like Dirtnap and Fat were releasing records by the Epoxies, and to me like the Epoxies were like a better version of that band. But in any case, that's what we're talking about. That's what I was talking about.
We're debuting a brand new band and song by Roxy Epoxy tomorrow, Punk News.
Oh, look at that. Synergy. That's what the corporate overlords want. What are we doing? We're an hour in. Are we talking about stories? Are we playing music? Nah, are we doing anything?
I do want to talk about their stories, but I want to get them their due day in court. So I say we kick it off till next week. And we lied about this being a normal episode. So
This was an episode where each of us, well, not John, because John talked about his experience with his life as a Danzig apologist. And Adam tried to peddle his cassette, and I tried to peddle a different podcast. So, I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, that's
Green Day tickets,
I guess.
I was really fearful that one of my daughters was going to be like, "Dad, we need to go see this." But luckily, it never that big mega hella mega tour, whatever they're doing this summer. But luckily, it seems to be not that interesting to teenage girls either. So cool.
I'm very curious about the exact slice of demographic that is interested in that tour. Because
it goes as high as about 35, I bet.
Well, right? I feel that it's the same demographic that's really arguing about. I don't know. That's like recording YouTube videos that are arguing about Star Wars. Like, I feel that it's like,
it's the moms with tramp stamps and the preteen girls.
I don't know about Fall Out Boy. That's a variable to me that I can't peg because I don't have any context for it. But the Green Day Weezer fandom that is out there has sort of crossed over from being people that were organically following that band to be people that did follow that band at one point and then stopped and then came back with some sort of nostalgia trip and are really into it on a nostalgia trip, but are
kind of said the same thing you said earlier about Hellcat, where you're like, I know it's cheesy, but I like it. I don't care.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that's a lot of like, there's a lot of people that, Like I think that like Weezer somehow succeeded in this because they went all the way around to come out the other side, right? So like Weezer came back. Weezer started recording stuff that was bad. It got worse. It was getting worse. It was getting even worse. And everyone was like, was holding their nose and being like, oh, do you remember when Weezer was good? It was in the 90s. And then they kept doing it. And then somehow they punched through the other end of the universe and came back around. And now everyone's like, I love this cheesy Weezer shit. And that's somehow become their thing. Like, there were fucking punk news year end lists where people had their 80s covers record on it. Like as their top record of the year. I don't even know which punk news writer I'm shitting on right now, but you should feel bad.
Sad, Adam.
Someone did.
I mean, you're right to do that, but I don't know.
I'm calling them out. Yeah, like, so I feel that it's one of those Ouroboros kind of things where pop culture has like somehow become so self-referential that we can't tell anymore if we're being genuine about anything or if we're just into things because we recognize them, and that's where we are. That's where we are with it. That's what I think. Are we still doing a show? I don't even know what's happening right now.
I don't know.
John left.
People need to stop making fun of Danzig. He's cool and he's trying.
He's trying. He's a freaking grandpa. He can hang it up. He can afford to retire. He doesn't need to do this, John.
All right.
That's the point.
He doesn't need to put himself out there. We will try again next week, people.
Podcast. To not talk about Danzig?
We'll try again next week to actually make a show that is a functioning machine. So podcast@punknews.org is how anyone gets a hold of any of us.
All right. We didn't even play any songs. We didn't talk about any news. I consider it a successful podcast.
I mean, it's not a professional like the old punks show. But
the Punk Till I Die, yes. Wow. Geezers galore.